fun. But we'll try again.
Blue sun.
Take two.
You are the wind.
Take two.
You are the trees. Or something, aren't they?
Bloopers. Welcome to the Classic Cult TV Club, where we watch cult TV from the year 2001 and before. Today we're here with Angus.
Hello.
Gypsy.
Resin. Oh, I mean, Resin.
Lisa.
Don't start laughing again.
Oh, we've lost Lisa. Alex.
Hello.
And Jeanette.
Hi.
And I'm Justin. And tonight we're looking at Goodnight Sweetheart, a TV series. Where was it originally shown, Angus? Goodnight Sweetheart.
England.
Probably England.
Probably England.
Maybe Scotland.
Odds are high. Yeah. It was made in the past.
was it late 80s
or
90s?
You know, this is even better than
us. Yeah,
no.
I love it when people guess.
Yeah,
completely wrong.
Come on.
Was it late 80s or early 90s?
Well, I think it was 90s.
It was
because I just read it. And I think it's set in the 90s and earlier.
It's time travel.
Yeah, no.
Spoilers.
So it's set across the 90s and the 1940s, late 1930s. It goes for 6 seasons in total, but they're relatively short seasons, so they're not full 20 episode seasons. And
what's
can
it about?
You give the Gossip Girl?
I can't
speech.
Remember. So, I grew up with this show. I showed it to Gypsy a year ago, and Gypsy said, I don't want to watch it unless it's like Gossip Girl.
I thought it was the best way to, like, pull out of going, no, I don't want to watch a show. Stop pushing this on me.
And so I described it in the most Gossip Girl fashion that I could.
Can you try and relive that?
So, it's about this main character,
Gary. Oh, and Valley Girl speak as well. Like, it's just, like, totally
about
okay.
Oh, my God. It's the best show ever.
Yeah, I think we'll back off from that. You don't do well enough, Angus. I'm sorry.
What do you mean? I've got, like, the click and the head.
Yeah, we're on podcasts, so...
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Okay, so keep going. Yes, what's it about?
So, it's about this guy called Gary who stumbles into the 1940s from his marriage in the 1990s where him and his wife are getting along half the time and then half the time they're not.
I think she's an emotional manipulator, which is totally in line with Gossip Girl.
And so he goes into the 1940s and falls in love with this bartender working in the middle of World War II in London. And
becomes
he's
the emotional manipulator.
Yeah.
And it's kind of him jumping between the two. It's the typical he's having two relationships at once and so he's doing the jumping from restaurant to restaurant and it's all the cliches and tropes and stuff except with a 50-year time difference. And he keeps on telling himself that he's the good person because, like, the other woman's dead by the time he's in his second relationship.
Oh, no!
He says it kind of semi-jokingly, but yeah. It's brilliant. And so he's got his buddy in on it who's constantly being dragged along into lying and covering for him. And yeah.
And producing fake...
And producing the currency for the 1940s and everything.
And then bringing stuff back for him.
Yeah,
because
then
he runs a shop, doesn't
in
he?
The end...
Not at the beginning.
But in the end he realises how much stuff is worth from the 1940s, how much genuine 1940s merchandise is worth, like records and even like tickets from events and stuff from big events that he can just get really, really cheaply.
Yeah, and in mint condition.
That does create a problem when he goes to sell a first pressing of a record and they're looking at it. How come this is in such good condition if it's 40 years old?
I thought the newspaper one was the best because he always bought like 3 or 4 newspapers, took them all back, and they're like, wow, this hasn't degraded at all.
Just wait, the ink is still wet.
Yeah. It looks like it was printed only yesterday.
Funny about that.
So it's all the time travel.
Yeah, it's kind of time travel. He is an accidental time traveler, so he just walked down a street and suddenly found himself in the 1940s. But he adopts it as kind of his life. So we're watching season 1, episode 2, which is very early on. The previous episode, he went to the 1940s, he met a beautiful girl, but the entire time he thought it was a dream, and he's realised that it's real and has slowly, I think, comes to term with that. And
they change, the two women change actors, yes, midway through.
So one of the weird things about this show is that both his wife and the woman from the 1940s change actors at the end of series three, which them both being the only female leads changing, yeah, at the same moment, and the claims of kind of solidarity that there was like some dodgy, yeah, situation, yeah, happening. Oh, yeah. That. Apparently, I did look into it. That was a theory, but there's not actually anything to support that, because I looked at one of the interviews that one of the actresses went through, and she said that she was pushed to do another show that her mother, who was her agent, thought would do much better, and so she had to leave Goodnight Sweetheart to do that other show, and the other show fell through and died after one season. And her acting career went downhill dramatically.
Didn't the bartender, she went on, was doing musical theatre or something like that? Yes. Yeah, she was
still stuff.
She's still in stuff?
Yeah, she's in something right now that's on right now.
Okay. Wasn't she in Doctor Who as well? She was in one of the
other... the Cyber King.
It was David Tennant and the other Doctor who had the Doctor's memories and stuff.
She was
evil playing Phoebe woman who became the Cyber King.
And that was the second one in the first three.
It's not super noticeable.
It was Dervla, gear one.
Yeah. And she's quite well known.
The changeover isn't greatly noticeable. Like, they actually picked actors that fit the bill really nicely. So when going in to watch the next episode of the first episode of the season where they changed over, it was actually nice because it was a little bit jarring, but they did it so well that the transition was just kind of like from inside to outside. Still the same world and plane of existence and stuff. It's just different people-ish.
I enjoyed both. They bring something slightly different. So the second Phoebe... Elizabeth Carling was a singer, so that's when Phoebe suddenly becomes musical, which she isn't in the first. So, and they do bring different qualities. And I feel that the second actor to play Phoebe has a very different quality that... I think the story changes because of the change in cast.
Yeah.
But that refreshes it. I think it was probably getting a bit tired.
The issue that I have is that you end up liking his actual wife more.
Yes, you
and
do.
I don't like that. I wanted to hate her.
Yes, and you don't sympathise. So you lose sympathy for him because you like the second wife.
Yeah.
You really feel for her and you... She's a
Yeah, you actually end up feeling for her as opposed to going, oh, I can understand why you're doing this. It becomes you're a disgusting
person. She starts off as being a bit more dubious but becomes more and more likable as she... Kind of,
so, Angus, you've seen it. Gypsy, you've seen it.
Gypsy's seen half of it.
Half of it? Yeah. I've only seen half of it, too. I saw the later episodes, I haven't seen this
I've
cast
seen the
at all,
first half and the change.
Lisa, have you seen
I've
this before?
I've watched it, but it's probably been a good 15, 20 years since I've seen an episode.
Aha.
Yeah, right, so old school. And I remember both casts, but very...
Okay, so you watched a fair bit of it.
Yeah,
then.
Used to be on ABC in the evenings.
Alex, have you seen
the... No, I was aware of its existence, but if you asked me about the plot of the show before hearing it tonight, I wouldn't have been able to tell you a single
thing. No.
I've always said, vaguely old 1930s or 1940s Britain, but other than that, I wouldn't have been able to give you a single plot point or anything.
Yeah.
I knew it was on, but I was young enough that when it aired on the ABC back, originally I didn't really care for that sort of programming because I was too young, so... Yeah, it's something that I wouldn't have even thought would it be good. It feels weird saying it's not good enough, but it doesn't feel like a series that you'd bring to the Cock TV Club. It just, because if I hadn't heard, it's a time traveler, love triangle sort of thing, I would have assumed it was just some sort of a period piece where there's just like two jokes and they run them into the ground.
Yeah.
It's funny though, like to me I feel like this is a cult classic because, not because it's got a sci-fi element in it, it just goes that little bit more beyond the normal sitcom. Like it's got a real English sitcom feel to it, but it's got this kind of underground following.
I wouldn't put it into sci-fi in the slightest. Does not knock on that door.
It's not really
coincidentally got time travel in it, but it's definitely not.
That's de-emphasised a lot.
And I agree, and I think that is not the reason why it's part of the Classic Cult TV Club tonight. I think it's just that
slice of life in that time period. It kind of hits home nicely. Yeah.
Time tunnel, it is not.
Yeah.
I think the time travel only becomes relevant in like
three episodes. The episode that he discovers the time travel, the final episode, and there was one episode where he always goes through this street in the one direction. And when he's in the 1940s, he gets dropped off on the other side of the street, and so he goes through the street in the wrong direction and ends up in the 1880s or something.
Yeah, there's one.
No, there's another one as well where the portal changes.
Yes.
As yes.
So
changes location or something?
Changes location.
No, it gets damaged.
Yeah, it gets damaged and he needs to find another one, and you're like, this is it. Plot twist, no, it's not.
Yeah, so the first episode's Rites of Passage. That's where he first discovers there's a sort of portal into another world down Duckett's Passage. And this one is Falls Rush In, episode 2. And so I guess we'll get on with that.
I think it'd also be worthwhile to say that we were talking about this earlier, but episode 1 and 2 definitely go hand in hand. Mm. Angus was an advocate for episode 1.
I've always been an advocate for episode 1 of TV shows.
Yes, that's right.
But they're never always... It's hard. That's pilots are never quite indicative. Yeah. But they're good if you've never seen it before.
This pilot's very set up, so that's where I've gone episode 2, because it still has a bit of that set up and it sets the feel.
Yeah.
The first one sets the scene, this one sets the feel.
And I don't think I ever watched the first episode, but it's very easy to pick up.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
So that's the thing, is I watched the first episode and was like, okay, sure, I get the show, but where's the time travel? Like, it wasn't inherently obvious. I struggled with the first episode.
They usually don't show it.
We moved on to the second episode, and I actually understood more of what was going on. The first episode was kind of like, over the head.
Okay.
A sort of hand over the head kind of action, if you will, listeners.
Gypsy is putting her hand over her head in a rapid motion.
And now cupping her tea and sipping it.
And the cups.
I think we watched the episode.
This is not an ASMR podcast.
But it basically, I think the second episode is shown because it's kind of got pilot and more of what it's about.
Yeah.
As opposed to just kind of, this is happening, is it real or not? Or,
good night, sweetheart. All my prayers are for you.
Okay, so we just watched Falls Rush In, Jeanette.
It's only the second one, so it's still early days. He's sort of kitting up to travel back in time, buying the suit.
Okay.
It's still very early, so he still hasn't really got into the rhythm of the full level of deception that he'll carry on. So he's still working out his own shtick, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Beginning to claim to be a songwriter and
a spy.
And a spy. Yes, yeah. He's beginning to make up the fairy tale about himself
that he solidifies.
Yes,
throughout the next X-Men series. How many series are there? There are six series.
And I guess early in the piece as well, he's quite downtrodden and unsuccessful. Mm. And he's a bit of a, I was going to say, Joe Nobody, but that's not very nice. But he has aspirations, but he doesn't,
his life in the present day isn't really very happy. He's not especially happily married. He's not unhappily married, but I wouldn't say it's a particularly happy marriage. They live in what's called a starter home, so their house is really dreary and his job is dead end, basically.
Yeah.
And he's already started doing things like stealing music and claiming it is things like that.
And
naming people that are going to probably get him in trouble in a few years' time.
Nietzsche.
In a relationship with Marilyn Monroe.
How hard would it have just been for him to have said his wife's name, though? I just don't get that.
He could have used her real name very easily. Yeah, wouldn't have mattered.
I think he probably is trying to disconnect
himself
from that.
Doesn't want to make her too real because then...
He has to be aware of his... actions.
So when it started playing, I immediately thought back to Dad's Army. It sounded like the Dad's Army theme tune playing.
Yeah. Which is, I guess, the same era, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got a bit of an old feel to it, doesn't it?
It is an original song, I think, Goodnight Sweetheart.
Yeah.
The song is.
Yeah.
So. From 1940s style thing, or...
No.
No, it's a 1940s song, isn't it?
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah, so it wasn't written
for
the show.
No, it wasn't for the song.
Yeah, that's interesting, because it really has that Dad's Army sound to it.
Yeah.
So, Alex, what did you think of this?
I think it's interesting. It's enough that I'm kind of just in watching the rest of the series, just because of how these relationships play out.
This is where the gossip girl part actually comes into it.
Yeah.
It draws you in with that as opposed to anything else.
Yeah. I think just the way that they've written all the characters is quite nice. Because I'm hearing people talking about how the wife is a bitch to him and he's a bitch to the woman in the 1940s, and I haven't seen those characterizations yet, so at the moment it's just more, they're sweet to each other, and they're kind of in a bit of an happy time, but otherwise quite sweet to each other in the 90s as well.
I think it develops as well, and I think, you know, the relationship with the girl in the 1940s, it's like at the moment, you know, he's trying to woo her, but then as he's kind of wooed her, then it's like, because he's got this fantasy life where he's this secret agent and he's this songwriter and he's this and that and the other, it's kind of like he uses that as a bit of a power, like he's got a bit of an ego thing with her, and
and at the moment that's not happening yet, so no. It just feels like down this like bloke just being sweet with a nice woman, and it seems really sweet right now, just
and as he kind of gets more money and things, like he's got the fake money and the 1940s artifacts and stuff, he can go, like with the bananas, where he can just kind of walk in and go, there you go, I have secret stashes of food that you can't get with your rations, and you know, and he kind of lords it over him a bit. And I think there's a few episodes where they kind of smack back, like they kind of humble him a bit, which does him some good. So
like the bananas thing is, it's just like a really sweet moment rather than him being an ego driven kind of get his wiggle his way into things.
I feel like the best way to look at it is like, it seems like a sweet thing for him because he's probably not thinking about it in any other way than they wouldn't have bananas. So I'll go and get bananas. He probably isn't initially going, haha, I can get bananas because, and you guys can't. And that's how most of his gestures come across. It's when you think back and go, hang on a minute, that's a bit dodgy. And like, I think she talks about pantyhose at one point.
Stockings.
And so he goes and gets her some because he can easily get them. Whereas she has to like stitch them back up. And
Just dye her legs with tea, which is something to do.
Yeah, draw the line at the back of the leg.
And so he's like, oh, I can get them. I'll get them for her. Easy done. And I think that's one of the episodes that she knocks him back and humbles him a bit as well.
Yeah, because I'm just thinking at this stage, it feels as though there's like six seasons worth of him being a total complete dick to get to become lovely and powerful sort of thing. Yeah. And it seems...
No, that's the thing. He's not an actual dick. You really do feel for him and start to like him. And there are a lot of moments where he's like, huh, okay, sure, that didn't pan out the way I thought it would and should have. Because he kind of goes, okay, the 1940s aren't as great as they should be, and what I have is better, and that sort of thing. And you kind of go, okay, so he does learn, and then he's like, but I like this more than what I have right now. And it's almost like a perfect example of why escapism is such a big thing, especially in our world. Like, it's a bit of a jump, but like video games and D&D, perfect examples of escapism, along with reading books. It's like someone becomes so obsessed with a world that they could make better in their head, and they can be anyone they want. Like, I don't know if you guys have ever done it, but I like to add myself into like books that I've read or video games that I've played, and I put myself into that world and be like, well, I would react like this when they do this, and maybe I could make that person's life better. They don't exist, and so to him there's probably that majorly disconnected bit, and that's what I kind of like about it, because you can visually see that sort of person going,
he's settling into a role.
He's like settling into a role.
And in his defense as well, he does, been a long time for me, but I do remember from episodes, he is legitimately torn between the two worlds and the two wives. Like, you know, the early days, he does have issues with his wife in the 90s, but he doesn't want to leave her. He could leave her, but he doesn't want to because he does love her. And I think their relationship starts to improve a bit, doesn't it? And I think part of that is because then he's opening up his own shop. He's got the confidence. He's getting the money coming in. He's getting the confidence from his lifestyle in the 1940s as well. And then that reflects well with the relationship with the wife, because he's not down on himself. He's got self-esteem, and, you know, that works well for both of them.
It's an odd series, isn't it? Because they're in an untenable situation, and you get to like most of the characters.
Yes.
They're not really dislikable characters.
There's no bad guys,
There's no bad guys.
Yeah. They're just eye rollers and heartwarming ones.
Even Ron, poor Ron, and you feel sorry for Ron.
You never got to see the Bobby, though. That was probably the saddest part of the entire thing. Yes. He is probably...
There's a recurring police officer character.
Ron Deadman.
Who is...
in both.
He's a simpleton is the best way to describe it, and he's hilarious.
Meet him in the first episode in the 1990s
initially,
and then you meet him in the 1940s in the same episode. So it's the same character.
Oh, so he's playing his ancestor.
He's playing his grandson and jumping between the two.
It's very
they're
cute.
They're both police officers.
That's awesome.
But there is a story there as well, which I won't, in case Alex watches it, say what the story is. There's, it's a spoiler story.
Yeah, he's a really well-done character as well. Character.
But there's such a like warmth to him as well. Like he's a simpleton, right? But sometimes simpletons can spout really insightful things just at the right time. So.
And he adds a lot of light-hearted, terrible moments to the show. Like, he introduces one particular musician from the 1940s who was pretty well hated since then.
But loved at the time.
Loved at the time.
Is this
George Formby?
George Formby!
Yeah.
Oh my god! I know of George Formby back when no one ever seemed to know who George Formby was except for me. I won a trivia night award because I was like 12 and knew who George Formby was. So back in the day, my dad, he did a play that was set in the 1940s and he looked a lot like George Formby at the time, and he learned how to play the ukulele. He got braces afterwards, and he can impersonate George Formby. He can play a whole heap of his songs, and he does.
Can he do the banana song?
Does he do birthday parties?
I like bananas because they have no bones or whatever.
I don't like tomatoes. Don't like ice cream cones.
But I like bananas because they have no bones. I used to hear them all.
Gypsy is dying inside.
And I grew up hearing them all. I did, because Dad used to practice and practice and practice, and he used to drive me insane. All of them. All of them.
Sorry. I'm very well
acquainted with George Formby. Thank you very much. It takes me right back to my childhood.
And Ron Deadman, the police officer, is his biggest fan. Is it? It's not Ron.
But you'd probably be better off just watching that episode. And you've got the gist of it now. Don't bother watching anymore. I forgot about George Formby. Don't
go there.
just trust me.
Constable Deadman is brilliant and is George Formby's biggest fan.
I wouldn't mind going back and watching them all.
Reg Deadman.
Familiarity with the characters.
Played
and
by Christopher Ettrick.
Most comedy. Affection for the characters. It just makes it so much funnier.
Yes.
Because you care about them. Yeah. And it is just so funny.
Some moments are just
I feel like there are a lot of cringe moments.
I was looking away at moments, they're going, oh my god, I know what line's coming up. And I think it was the marijuana line.
Like,
oh no.
Yikes.
It's glorious though. He pulls off just like the cringiest lies, the worst lies you could come up with. And he just, it works because it means nothing to anyone.
And I guess that's the thing. He's just some schlub, isn't he? He's not, like, particularly bright.
He has no idea at the start. Like, he has no timeline idea.
He just fumbles his way through.
Oh, yeah, it's going to finish in... The war will finish in, like, what, 5 years or something? It's like, oh, honey, why did you go back? You got a suit. You might look the part, but you can't talk the part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of historical characters that they come across, not characters, obviously, and George Formby. There's a lot of other historical figures. At one stage, he's talking to Guy Burgess. Oh, is it Kim Philby? One of the two at the British Embassy. And he realises who he's talking to and drops an appropriate line. I don't know if you know the story about the British spies.
They were
Cambridge spies. They were recruited while at Cambridge. So Philby was head of MI5 or MI6 or something while working as a Russian spy. And Burgess was a diplomat in the diplomatic service. They were really high positions in English society. And it only came out...
Oh, and there were spies.
Yeah.
There were spies
for Russia. Yeah. Oh, my God.
And this only came out in the 50s. And there's a lot of... Because he knows. Nobody else knows. So he drops a pertinent... hint, and I think it's Philby goes, oh, yes, okay, well, whatever you say, you know. The advantage of the future knowledge. They mentioned the Cray twins, who are the gangster sort of twins from East End of London. There's a lot of other historical references through it. It's interesting. And then, of course, in the present day, there's a lot of reference to the politics of England. So it definitely wears its left-wing political hat.
Yeah,
sleeve, this series.
I noticed the obvious joke of when he's calling me in and saying, if you're crazy, just like if you
go to
John Major. I don't know much about British politics of the era. The only thing I know is John Major's appearance in Spitting Image.
Right.
Where basically he was so bland they didn't bother even to paint the puppet.
Oh,
that's
the story.
Oh, they didn't even bother painting it.
Yeah.
Okay.
After that segue.
Yeah, there was a spin-off special as well. There was
a Christmas special. 2016.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's recent.
Yes.
Oh wow.
So we might have to show that as one of our Christmas viewings.
Yeah.
It's called Many Happy Returns.
Well, as long as it's not send up with the Christmas Carol, because
not even relevant to Christmas. I don't think Christmas makes an appearance.
No.
I think they were trialing a new series.
They were hoping to get it.
They're trying to do one of these because that's a bit the rage at the moment, doing this kind of reboot, planning on rebooting it as in like restarting it and redoing it with the new cast.
Time has moved forward.
Yeah,
and spinning it off.
So it's the main character going from the 1940s through to the 60s and 70s and then jumping from there to 2016 and just going, what the...
So he now goes, oh, there's mobile phones. And he hasn't seen those things.
Yeah. And he starts stealing Adele songs to go back in time.
Anyway, no spoilers. We should watch it.
Yes. Though I think we did agree we were going to watch Wiggly Christmas.
I thought it was Star Wars Life Day.
A holiday special. Not the Lego special, the original, the OG. Well, there's going to be a lot of Star Wars stuff coming out this Christmas.
You're right,
because we're having... Like, I think the Ahsoka series, the Book of Boba Fett, like, a lot of things are coming out later this year. I think it's Life Days, yeah.
God, did it Wiggly Christmas as well.
Okay, how about we do it this way? If any of the Wiggles die before Christmas, we'll watch Wiggly Christmas. But because Star Wars stuff is coming out, our hands are kind of bound, because that is a massive cult following.
So, and, you know, I've never seen it, but
it's so bad.
I've heard so much about it. I can't wait to just rip the living shit out of it. It's going to be great.
Jeff continues waking up.
We can't have an episode without talking about Star Wars, guys. No, I'm sorry. I'm not a Star Wars fan, but it's the rule now.
At
least we're not doing Marvel versus DC.
Everyone knows that DC would win.
They were going to do also a musical of this.
Oh, no, they did a musical of it. They actually did it.
But I think that it only ran for something like 2 nights.
Yeah, because it was terrible. It was awful. They had a completely different cast. They recast a couple of people.
He can't sing.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a musical. Like.
Apparently, neither could the other Gary.
Oh, no.
And there were no original songs. It was all the musical elements were songs from...
Nostalgic stuff.
That he was playing in the 40s. Yeah, it was a jukebox musical, and it didn't do very well at all.
That's funny.
Oh, wow.
So Angus, what do you think about Ron?
Ron. Ah, that was the other character. So that was the one who came in to talk about, like, oh, it would be great to travel back into
and see up
always inappropriate as well.
He's also married, but his marriage falls apart.
He's married to Stella, and in fact that's how he wife is doing the same course as Yvonne,
and she was on the phone with Stella in the episode
and he is basically
Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble really
isn't he's the one that does all the chores that he does Gary's printing when he
does everything for Gary,
like he does the papers and the money and all that sort of stuff.
He is a good friend to Gary.
He's a good friend to Gary.
I wouldn't say Gary's a good friend to Ron, but Ron's
You feel sorry.
I don't like Ron in so many levels, though. He is... Disgusting.
Yes.
Oh. Yes. But like, I just remember him being the one that was kind of, you know, half kind of scolding him and half kind of like going like, you need to pick a side, mate. Yeah. You can't cheat on both of them. You know?
That's the problem. Totally agree with that. Yes, he was like that. But he was also a sleaze and a pig, and I really hate that aspect of him.
Yeah.
He was disgusting.
So he's this morally almost better than thou slob. He's the slob character.
Well, he describes himself in a Personals ad as fat, sad, beer-swelling slob.
Gary writes that for
Gary
him.
Gary writes that for him, and he gets him lots of dates.
Oh, what, from people who want to fix him or something?
Who also sad.
It doesn't explain how it
doesn't explain.
No.
It
never explains the psychology of that. Let's see, times when you feel really sorry for Ron. He's a very dysfunctional person.
He's a very dysfunctional. Yeah. Like them or not, they're all amazing characters.
They are amazing characters, don't get me wrong. No. He's just disgusting. Yeah. But then again, so is Gary and his girlfriend. Yeah, and the only person I think that can do no wrong is
Phoebe.
Phoebe.
Oh, Reg Dedman.
Reg,
I just want to hit my head against a wall. Oh my God. Some conversations, he's like, yeah. And you're like, Reg, that's wrong. It's all good.
Naivety.
Yeah.
If everyone could just be Reg in my life, I think it'd be a bit easier that way. But if they're just naive and dumb, then you don't have to have smart conversations with everyone about why they're naive and dumb. You just go, you know what? Yeah, sure. I'm going to go over here now, away from you.
Dang, it's the big question for tonight.
Does this carry on?
Oh, well, no, I think...
Oh, food.
Two different questions. Right? Jeanette's asking about food. Gypsy's asking about, does this show stand up?
Yeah.
I think this show stands up.
I think the show stands up.
I think it's really good. And I think everyone should watch it. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back and watch it now.
Yeah.
Food? Oh, because they appeared in this episode and are a theme later on, I'm going to rate this episode bananas.
Custard powder.
I love bananas.
Not
because they've got
no
bones.
Not stolen?
No. Bananas. Definitely bananas.
Stolen's German. You can't make it stolen.
I reckon this is a chips and vinegar episode. Chips and vinegar.
I'm thinking a good hearty English meal, bangers and mash.
Bangers and mash.
Yeah.
Or steak and kidney pie.
Balfour's.
You know
pie.
I don't like kidneys.
Balfour's pie.
I think anything classic in English would work. I'm going to go with bananas because I think this is. I think this is a sweet, lovely show that's a bit inappropriate if you look at it in a certain light. But everyone should watch it.
Well, there you have it. Yes, we have no bananas.
So modern audiences, you think they'd cope?
I think so. It's a bit slow at points, but I think
I'll ask Alex this question, actually.
Yeah, I think it was a bit slow, because I think if they ran too fast, they would have probably filled the episode with too much plot, and it would have seemed too awkward. So I think it did feel slow, but it felt slow for a purpose, because it needed to basically ease into the plot a little bit.
Do you feel like punchlines, jokes, things like that could still carry on to now as well? Because I know that there's a lot of political stuff that definitely went over my head. I don't know enough of World War II or 90s adult
English
stuff. I mean, like, I literally asked that. It was the joke. Who would you have to dinner with? It was Oliver Cromwell,
George Best.
Two famous people and a person I didn't know because he was a British footballer, apparently.
Yes.
If you were an English person in the, you know, anywhere from the 60s to the 90s,
you knew at the time you would have known.
I actually know who George Best is from Preston Pig.
Preston Pig TV show from
the early 2000s, 90s. I think it's I've got it on the list.
But you know about its reference from another reference.
Yeah.
From an old TV show.
But do you feel like it would still carry across now? Because they do rely on a lot of the jokes.
Yeah, so. I think, I mean, before when I picked up there, I knew who John Major was, and therefore I could get what kind of joke they were playing there. But I think if you didn't know that, it would be just as much of a culture clash. Like, say, there's a lot of 1940s stuff that I don't know off the top of my head very well, especially 1940s British stuff. And so that might be a bit of a case is in there and how to get to. But also, yeah, like I said, I knew who Don't Make It Watch, but not who George Best was. So that was a bit of a, in some ways, a bit of also a, this is the 90s. We're doing 90s things here.
Yeah.
Sort of time. But it depends on whether the jokes land, if you actually know who everybody is.
Yeah.
Mm.
I think the 40s personalities are explained within the show because they know the audience won't be familiar with them. Whereas the 90s stuff is the market audience that they're aiming at. So some of the 90s humour, and I guess a lot of the politics in it is quite dated now.
Yeah,
to
it's part of the period,
because it is
about the period. Because like, I remember the Friends character, I'm writing about women's sleep, and it's like, that would have been old then.
Yes. Oh, yeah, definitely.
But that's still a joke that's used now in a lot of, like, bigoted men. It's like, ah, now that women have got rights, sort of thing. Everything's all gone downhill. Yeah, I feel like that sadly still carries across.
But in a
worse light.
Yeah, but I think specifically using the phrase women's lib kind of dismissively, like, attacking second wave feminism alone or anything today. Oh, women can now do things. Oh, how scary. Not even complaining about video games yet.
So bananas and bananas out of 14.
Custard too. Banana custard.
Bananas out of 14.
I'm gonna keep it classic.
Bananas out of 14 sounds like a Eurovision group.
We all keep trying to sway him, but he's very steadfast in his opinion.
He is.
Bananas.
Very well. Okay. So
who doesn't like bananas?
Okay, so that was a good night, sweetheart. We'll see you next month for
deciding.
Christmas in July. The Wiggles.
I'm going to put forward a suggestion for a Christmas episode. You know what? As long as it's not a Christmas Carol again, I'm fine, all right? No more Christmas Carol. No more!
But Patrick Picard. Oh, Patrick Stewart. Oh, my God.
Patrick Picard.
Yeah, Patrick Picard. I mean, Christmas Carol, why not? Go for it. Get it. Let's push that next. We'll watch it in Halloween.
I've been eyeing off a Darmok and Gillard hoodie on Redbubble, man. I think I'm going to get it.
See if you can find it on Etsy. Support local artists. Starving artists.
Will do.
Or local starving artists.
Yeah.
I feel like now we're just prolonging the conversation because we're seeing Justin getting more and more frustrated.
I've been watching it out of my peripheral.
Every time he goes...
I really enjoy doing that because sometimes Justin's like, right, we got to wrap
this up. Yeah, that's it. Once he starts twirling his finger, then I want
to
go more.
To everybody else. So it's like, nah, I'm going to keep this conversation going. Yeah, I can cut it later. Yeah. I mean, you know where you were going to cut it. That's fine.
Yeah.
We should add just like one little podcast of like people being assholes to Jeanette. And it's just like a mashup of all the people just talking on rants and tangents about things. Completely out of context.
Yeah.
With like, don't you forget about me playing in the background.
Is that the show team version?
So that was Cult TV Club.
Yeah, that was Cult TV Club.
You even took Justin's job!
The dude
has two things he likes to do, the introduction and the ending, and you've taken both away from him tonight.
Thank you very much. That was Cult TV Club. Good night.
There you go.
I'm done.
Oh, it's all falling apart.
Sorry, Justin.
Good night.
Good night, sweetheart.